chicken fried, and cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and a radio.
Good morning, I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. A little different day today, just every once in a while travel schedules get in the way. But Jimmy Patronis is on with us. He is our congressman from Florida District 1. Jimmy, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, buddy, missed you last week.
I know. But, you know, hey, a little absence makes the heart grow fonder, right?
That's exactly right. Your family of listeners missed you, too.
The Blue Angels flight suits contract, I know you had been kind of looking into this. I think Channel 3 reported that you'd actually sent a letter following up on this when we talked. I think you'd said you'd made a call or two. Any news, any progress, any information? Do we know anything more?
So we sent a letter. We needed to be thoughtful with our letter, basically engaging on behalf of all parties, kind of talk it as an open letter, walk us through the procurement process, deadlines, times, dates, when things were noticed. I mean, because when you do have an open procurement, you need also have to have a public notice period. This is kind of what we did a lot of it on the back end in the state. And so, we asked that. We also asked as a helpful way, if this procurement has met everything it's supposed to meet, what are the options to get, the sewing box as a sub? Can we get also times and dates of when the next procurement for this current contract is expired? I mean, it's kind of, if everything was done by the letter of the law, and the only way really the sewing box in this case can deal with it, there's a legal process. It's called a bid protest. And this is where there was an attorney on WAR earlier this week,
right,
that was speaking on behalf of the sewing box. But, even he made the comment that she's going to need to hire a contract attorney. And it's terrible that it's going to become a legal battle, but that is the process, especially if the Navy did this by the letter of the law.
Right.
We haven't gotten our correspondence back from the Navy, but I'd be shocked if we don't see something here in the next 48 hours to a week.
Okay. I know we've been talking about, and people, it's a big issue for a lot of people. I mean, made national news in all kinds of places.
Sure.
I was actually a little bit surprised at how, CNN was doing a story, and I'm like, well, okay, fine. The USS Abraham Lincoln, I said this yesterday and I'll say it again. I don't know enough to know whether the stories are exaggerated or valid, whether the concerns are heightened or normal for long deployments. Obviously being deployed on a ship for a long time is an adversity for everybody who's ever experienced it. I'm hearing conflicting claims, from even the Secretary of War. What's your perspective on this? I mean, we are a Navy town. We build aircraft carrier staff here, pilots, maintainers, all kinds of people who go deploy to the carriers. So this is obviously a matter that we care about deeply. But what's really going on? What's your assessment?
Yeah, look, these vessels, as amazing as they are, they're still they're working ships around the clock. The operations that take place, the crews, and look, you've got 200 plus days at sea where some of these men and women have not seen their loved ones. I remember when I was on the Truman, fresh fruit, fresh produce, those things have to be flown in. So, I mean, there's thousands of men and women on this vessel. So,
right.
Yeah, look, I could see where, tensions and passion would go up and go down. I mean, you also have in these vessels, I mean, unfortunately, it is what it is. These are very young men and very young women. And very young romances develop. So, I mean, you can imagine that there's all types of emotions that come to bear, including hostility, anger. So, yeah, a little bit of cabin fever is to be expected, especially the nature of the conflict. This is the first time, I don't know how many years, that, our aircraft have gone in an aggressor mode, have gone in to do the attack. So this is a bunch of brand new emotions, brand new exercises, brand new missions that we have not seen. And yeah, there's probably some in there that felt like this is probably a little more than I was expecting.
And I think it's also fair to say that, the numbers indicate a higher reenlistment rate on the Abraham Lincoln than, most other, maybe any other vessels. And, my industry a lot of times leans into the criticism, especially of this president or of causes they do not like. And so I'm kind of trying to factor all that in. You know, I don't want to dismiss a concern that's a real concern. I don't want to overblow it if it's not that, you know. So anyway, I appreciate that. And, you know, you're right. I mean, you know, sometimes people sign up for the military in peacetime, you know, and it turns out to be a war, and it's not exactly what they were hoping for, which is in addition to all of the youth and factors and things that you mentioned. The Democratic Socialists, I've been spending a lot of time today talking about them since it's, you know, primary day. It seemed valid. Shannon Bream did a really good interview with Fox News Sunday a couple of weeks ago. And I think that most Americans who are, let's say, 40 and up are just contemptuously dismissive of the DSA, which is very understandable because we grew up, you know, Cold War era, and we know this is stupid. And, you know, we've seen it fail over and over again, and we know millions of people got killed last century by this way of thinking, and we know it does not work. But the young people don't have that experience, and the young people sound, you know, hey, I mean, you know, Zohran Mamdani's kind of makes some sense, and AOC, you know, she's working on woke 2.0, you know, and everything's going to be better. And they're winning. Like, when I look at them showing up at the school board and the county commission, the city council, they haven't won elections yet, but they're winning in getting their agenda out and prioritized and getting the votes that they want because they're showing up and they're committed. And, you know, say what you want. Don't ignore them. What's kind of your perspective on what's happening in the Democrat Party right now?
Well, they have – Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats have created this big, massive tent – and said, oh, yeah, we'll take you all in. And as they have gone in, now they're eating it from the inside out. So the Democrats have a virus inside their party. And so these aren't, you know, my parents or my grandparents' Democratic Party that were the Dixiecrats or that more moderate. These people are certifiably crazy. And, you know, my Democratic opponent, you know, she reads from that scripture every day. So, I mean, they're certifiable, and they're going to destroy our country. You're exactly right. Look, this is a movement of this generation. And you know what? There was a previous generation that was not that way. So, I mean, you got to take them serious. At the same time, their messages are resonating because they've got charismatic leaders. I mean, Mamdani's out there. You know, he's a silver-tongued guy. And it says things in a way that are interesting and charismatic and warm. And yeah, I know what I like, what I hear. But that guy's nuts. And this is the only thing you got to push back is you got to have, you know, governance that uses the policy and rules in place in order to say, no, we're not going to, you know, defund the police. No, we're not going to eliminate the Senate. No, we're not going to eliminate the presidency or the Supreme Court. You know, so, I mean, it's incumbent on all of us. I tell folks, if you don't hold your electeds accountable, you get the government you deserve.
And, you know, one of the things that I thought the co-chair of the party actually told Shannon Bream, and I agree with her, is for years the Democrats and Republicans also said, don't go start a third party because, you know, you're wasting your vote. Well, you know, they took that lesson to heart and like, fine, we'll take over your party. just like Trump took over the Republican Party, you know, you can run an outside insurgency or an inside insurgency. And, you know, guess what? Inside seems to work.
Well, and like I said, Hakeem was out there to keep their mouth shut, you know, for the longest time as the Mamdani's of the world got elected. And now they realize they've got a real mess on their hands because now they're taking out incumbent Democrats all over the nation. And this is where it boils down to what it's always boiled down to. It's going to be the independents that go, man, you know what? Those guys are a little too far crazy for me. This is where I feel like, you know, I'll go with the devil that I know, and I'm going to vote Republicans. I mean, this is the dilemma the Democrats have. You know, it's just, but there's an enthusiasm that is there, and do not take any election for granted.
Well, and look at, you know, same thing in the Republican Party. You see this issue of, you know, low voter turnout in primaries. And candidates run to the right of existing, you know, fairly well-established Republicans and, you know, win because they can win in a primary even if they're not really the most viable in the general, or maybe they are. But, you know, that's a problem. I mean, we see it in our party, too. So the president's response on South Korea, there's, you know, one reaction is, good Lord, man, what of our alliances next are you going to abandon? But there's another response that says, well, we police their border and keep them safe from the very dangerous threat in North Korea, and their thanks is they won't help us a little bit on Iran?
Yeah, look, I've been to South Korea. I've been to the border. You know, it's a propaganda machine that South Korea uses, North Korea uses. But, you know, we have a massive human investment in South Korea. But, you know, unfortunately, we really haven't had many allies step up in this whole Iranian conflict. I've been blown away. But this is, you know, the challenge that we've been dealt. And the president, unfortunately, I think he's been going this alone, and we can't force anybody else to get involved with us. But at the same time, we are dependent on these relationships we've got that are still our allies. It stinks.
Yeah, and you know, we saw this with NATO. We've seen this with relation to Ukraine and Russia, and you know, Spain, obviously. And so, you know, there's a part of me that looks at the things Trump does and thinks, you know, good Lord, man, you've abandoned our tradition of international relations. But at the same time, it's not as crazy as it seems when you start to look at what really happened. And I just hope, I mean, I hope that some of our allies will realize that, you know, hey, you do have an investment that matters, and you shouldn't be accustomed to just taking from us all the time and getting the benefits of our relationship. And, you know, like South Korea is a very flourishing, vibrant capitalist democracy. But, yeah, you know, maybe a little return for the favor would be nice, right?
100%. But it is what it is. You know, they there's a very new government installed over there. You know, this is all part of just being able to probably try to keep the home front stable as these guys are trying to establish governance.
Hey, last thing is, you and I were talking a little bit off the air when we began, and you were just, I don't know, you were telling me a story about somebody you're helping with the VA, and it struck a nerve with me because, you know, you were the CFO, right? And so you have a lot of knowledge of dealing with insurance companies, and it's not that the VA is insurance, but you were basically saying, I didn't exactly expect that this was going to be my role, but this veterans and their benefits winds up being a major part of any congressman's job, right?
It is. It is. I mean, we handle hundreds of cases every month, and then you look at how many other really good support organizations exist outside of the government that are trying to help folks be able to navigate the complexities of the VA. But you look at it, when I was CFO, somebody would have an insurance claim, they'd have difficulty getting their claim filled, met, understood, explained. They would come to the state, we would go and advocate on their behalf, and we'd ultimately help them get to a satisfactory point. This is no different with the VA. You know, I'm dealing with a young man who's sitting at about 30%
disability.
But he's wheelchair bound. He had a 30-foot fall, lots of trauma, and the VA feels like some of this stuff was just pre-existing. And so now you got to go and you got to make this a personal case. You've got to go and advocate. So, you know, we've been making phone calls in the last, you know, 24 hours, and you know, unfortunately, every single day goes by, you know, his quality of life is deteriorating, and you know, I hope we can get him the treatment that he needs, the help that he needs, because it's how traumatized it is to his family that's trying to support him. But again, it's no different. You know, the VA is kind of in the case, same capacity as the insurance company. You know, he's got to get them to understand this claim, and then ultimately, you know, do the right thing.
Jimmy Petronis, he is our congressman from Florida District 1. We normally talk to him on Monday, but just happened to be talking to him today because of schedule stuff. Jimmy, as always, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, guys. Take care.